Good morning. This week I had an experience that some of you might find humorous and others of you may find humiliating. I was at Costco with my 18-month-old and he was strapped into the cart, and just as we're pulling up to check out, he decides that he doesn't want to be in the cart anymore and he starts lunging and he literally breaks the seatbelt that he's strapped in at, and the seatbelt comes up and it knocks him in the face. And he starts bleeding. I didn't realize it at the time, but under his lip, he's bleeding now. And I'm like panicking because, of course, I'm just worried that he's gonna fall out of the cart, but also because he's upset and he's hurt. And I notice people start watching me, and I think, okay, it's fine. I'll pull it together. Well, at the same time, of course, remember we're in a pandemic. So he starts pulling my mask off my face. And then I go, well, I'll put him inside the main part of the cart because that will keep him happy. He can play with all the stuff in there. And as I'm doing that, I have him in one arm, and then on the opposite arm, I go to reach in and I grab one of the pre-made dinners from Costco. You probably know what I'm talking about. They're over in the deli, and they have a new one that I would highly recommend. That's a taco kit, by the way, which seems weird from Costco, but I promise it's amazing. So I grab the taco kit, and unfortunately, the plastic part that goes on top, the lid, those are very secure on those items. And as I'm picking it up, the tacos completely fall apart and they go on the cement floor. They go through like all the holes of the cart. And by this point, I've made a huge scene. And I'm thinking to myself, standing there, shredded cheese all over the floor, I really wish I wasn't here alone right now. I really don't know why I thought it was a good idea to take my toddler to Costco by myself. And so I'm just thinking through all the things that I would do differently if someone was with me right now. Like if my husband was with me right now, I'd say, okay, you just pay for the stuff. I'm out of here. I'll get him to the car. But instead, I have to live with the shame and the awkwardness of making this huge scene and unpacking the grocery cart. And I realized in that moment that being in Costco with a toddler by yourself during a pandemic is not for the faint of heart. Actually, if you want to know an even crazier story about how truly insane I am, you should hear my story about flying alone with my toddler during a pandemic, but we'll save that for another day. But today, what I want to talk to you about is something that is so near and dear to my heart. It's something that I would say is deep in my bones. In fact, it's not really a topic, it's more of a way of life, and it's really about community. Now, some of you may be feeling like community is a thing of the past, like it's almost a foreign word these days. It was so 2019. That was so pre-pandemic. You feel so disconnected after what has taken place this year. And maybe you were on the margins of community before COVID, and now you feel completely distant. Maybe you were intimately connected with a tribe before March, and now you feel completely lonely and isolated. In fact, I just saw a friend's Facebook status the other day. This is what he literally wrote. He said, I haven't hugged another human in months, and it hurts my soul a little more every day. You know, the world would have us think that we're merely made up of body and mind, because the culture focuses on the physical and the mental. But we know that God made us not just mind and body, but he made us spirit and soul. And just like the mind and body, the spirit and soul needs to be cared for and strengthened. And one of the major ways that we stretch and grow and look out for our souls is through community. You know, even before the coronavirus, our Western society, as we all know, was obsessed with individualism. Think about it. We idolize the rugged individual like Bear Grylls who goes off into the wilderness and conquers obstacles. Or we tell the stories of our ancestors who came over and depended on no one and nothing, and they made something of themselves. We're in awe of the people who don't seem to need anyone or anything. We say words like they're so strong or self-sufficient. But you know what has been proven is this. Independence is not the key to happiness. Independence is actually the key to loneliness. The quickest way to make yourself insecure, fearful, miserable, and lonely is to pretend that you have it all together and that you don't need anyone else. The Bible shows us in the very beginning in Genesis chapter 2, it says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it. And the Lord God commanded the man, 'You are free,'" that word free, "'you are free to eat of anything in the garden.'" And then he goes on to the next verse and he says later, "It's not good for man to be alone." And that's so fascinating because even when Adam had all of this freedom, all of this independence, he was literally living in perfection. God says, there's something wrong here. There's something not right. This independence, this type of freedom is actually not good for you. It is not good for man to be alone. You know, we're hardwired to be dependent. From the beginning of time, God craved connection, even for himself. And then from their inception, we see humans craving connection. Humans crave communion with others like them. And Adam looks around at all the beauty, all the landscape, all the animals, the sounds and the smells, and he can find no one to fulfill his longing for fellowship. He has everything. The world is literally perfect and he's still incomplete. And so God makes Eve. Now, if you're taking notes this morning, which I hope you are, the first thing I want you to write down today is this. It's just two words. Plus one. I want you to write that down. Plus one. You probably all know this phrase. It's used in social settings when you're RSVPing to something or some sort of engagement. When you're booking a reservation, you say, you know, "He or she is my plus one," and they're this person that is accompanying you. And for some of you, that term just breeds anxiety because it brings you back to having to find a date to go to your friend's wedding. But that's not what we're going to focus on today. What we're going to focus on is how this theme, plus one, is weaved throughout Scripture. How throughout the story of God, he is always weaving in the theme, plus one. The Trinity is always finding ways to illustrate the desire for more people. Jesus is always communicating to widen the circle, to invite people into community, to stop making our faith private and individual. You, me, plus one. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, out of the Message, it says, "It's better to have a partner than go it alone. Share the work, share the wealth. And if one falls down, the other helps. But if there is no one to help, tough. Two in a bed warm each other. Alone, you shiver all night. By yourself, you are unprotected. With a friend, you can face the worst." And this is my favorite part. In the Message, it says, "Can you round up a third? A three-stranded rope isn't easily snapped." Plus one. I love to walk, and the first couple months of COVID, I put in over 100 miles just walking in those first like 60 days. And we don't need to talk about the last couple months because, I mean, yeah, definitely falling off the bandwagon, but that's besides the point. Here's the thing, as much of an extrovert as I am, and as much as I think I want to walk with people, I have learned a very hard truth. Not everyone walks like I walk. People walk different styles and paces. And some people's walk I would consider more of a stroll. And other people look like they have a predator running after them, and I don't want to associate with that. But I have found that finding a walking buddy is challenging because so many people have their idea of what a walk should look like. But you know what? It's really interesting because the best walks that I have taken, and by best, I mean the farthest, the longest mileage, and the fastest that time has passed. So maybe not the fastest, most efficient walk, but the most enjoyable and actually going the farthest have been when I'm sharing a walk with someone else, even when I have to compromise my pace. And I think of that as a beautiful picture of community. So today I want to give you just three benefits to walking through life plus one. If you have your notebook, again, write this first thing down. The first benefit to living life plus one, the first benefit to living life plus one is that it's safer. There is safety in numbers. And I know that seems counterintuitive in our COVID-19 world, but hear me out. I want you to think about a lion waiting for his prey. He's out in the Serengeti. He's hunched down underneath a tree as a herd of antelope come bounding by. Now, as in just about every group or every community, there's probably a straggler. There's an antelope that's kind of hanging in the back, maybe that's just not as fast as others or is being a little bit more independent. What happens to the antelope that's not with the herd? You guessed it. The lion comes out and they get eaten. When you're part of the herd, but not really, you are putting yourself at a greater risk. Because there's safety in numbers, friends. When you have a community or a herd that can look out for you and see when you're falling behind, when you have a group of people that can look out for your soul, they can see things that you can't, and that's really called blind spots. Think about it. You don't know what you don't know. I don't know what I don't know. You know, when you have a tail light out, you can't see that. You have to have someone tell you, hey, your tail light's out. Or when you have lettuce in your teeth or your pants are unzipped, you can't see it, but it's there. You know, these past 2 weeks have been devastating for our state as acres and acres of land have burned all over. And one of the images that we've seen and that have been so powerful and the stories that have been shared are, of course, of the firefighters coming to battle these blazes. And I think of firefighters in terms of the safety in numbers and the effectiveness of a group, of a tribe. You know, when one firefighter goes out with a hose and battles a blaze, they're not going to make a dent. But when hundreds of firefighters come together with each of their own individual hoses, they're able to fight against the fire. They're able to create safety for all of us as they gather together. One on their own is not much good. Psalm 11, verse 14 says, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. The second benefit to journeying with others to write down this morning, the second benefit to journeying and walking with others is that you will be supported. It keeps you from giving up. You know, my uncle just got into beekeeping this last year. And so my husband and I went up to go kind of check out his setup. It's something that we've always been really fascinated by. And so we went up and saw the honeybees. And I don't know how much you know about honeybees and the way that they work, but we've learned a lot lately. And it's been really fascinating to see the way that they work together and the way they support and take care of one another. Because when it gets cold enough, bees actually make a cluster, almost like a basketball. And the inside of that is very, very warm. So individual bees rotate in and out of the center of the cluster, and then they take turns on the outside being chilly. And conversely, if it's too hot, they'll start fanning, which we actually saw because we were there in the summer. They start fanning to get rid of the hot air inside of the hive. You know, bees support one another when the inevitable exhaustion hits. They're working 24/7, so there's inevitable exhaustion. When the climate changes for the season, they go into perfect formation to support one another. But here's the deal, friends. If you haven't figured it out from this year already, the inevitable crises of life are coming. You will need, if you don't need it right now, support. And no one should have to be alone. No one should have to be alone the first night after their spouse walks out, or waiting to hear the results of a test, waiting to find out a diagnosis, burying their child. No one should be evacuating their home alone. No one should be journeying through infertility alone. No one should be alone when they're laid off. And these things in life, they will happen eventually. It's foolish for us not to have our safety net and our support network ready now, because at some point, you and I, we will have life-shaking crises, and none of us know what it is or when it will hit us. So I have a question for you this morning. I want you to even write this down. Who is committed to you right now? Who would be there in an instant for you? And then I want to flip that around and I want you to ask, who are you committed to? And do those people know that? Do they know, the people that come to your mind right now that you are committed to? Do they know that you would be there in an instant, that you are their support network? Maybe some of you have had those life-altering experiences this year. I think of many people who have lost loved ones this year or gone through some really tragic experiences. And I think about a group that we have here at Evergreen called Grief Share. We do this every year. It's so powerful. It's going to be Monday nights here at Evergreen, and it's a support group. It's a place for safe conversation for people who've lost a loved one, to process and to pray and to grieve and to give healthy tips to move forward. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 says, you should be like one big family, full of sympathy toward each other. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 26 says, if one member suffers, all suffer together. This is a quick side note. I think a lot of people are nervous or get in a small group and feel awkward about the idea of crying. Like, they don't know what to do when things get emotional. So I've talked to a lot of people who are like, yeah, like, small groups aren't really for me. Like, I don't really know how to like handle those situations. I feel really uncomfortable. And there's this awkwardness that people feel when someone cries or it's a raw emotion. And I just want to give you a tip this morning and hopefully put your mind at ease. When someone else is crying or upset, it's not your job to fix them, but it is your job to be present. And a quick tip would be, if someone's crying in your small group or someone's crying in your presence, just pray. All you have to do is offer to pray for them. You don't have to fix it in that moment. Be supportive of one another. Don't be afraid to weep with those who weep. And the Bible also says, please rejoice with those who are rejoicing. The third benefit to living life plus one is that you and I are smarter. We are smarter when we live plus one. You learn more about God, the world, yourself, and other people. Proverbs 28, verse 26 says, only fools trust in what they alone think. I talked earlier about blind spots. Did you know that living in community actually doesn't just make you smarter intellectually, but it makes you smarter emotionally and relationally? You don't just learn more facts and collect more data being around other people, which is true. You learn from others, but you actually increase your emotional intelligence. You interact and you relate smarter. And honestly, in a lot of situations, that's way more helpful than any kind of book knowledge. People who live in community are smarter at relationships, and they know more about themselves. They know more about how they're wired, about their blind spots. Obviously, one of the most important relationships in your life, if you're married, is with your spouse. Now, sadly, the pandemic and stay-at-home orders are wreaking havoc on many marriages. There has been talk, actually, amongst relationship experts and family attorneys that divorce rates are expected to spike post-pandemic as the courts begin to open and fully function. And in fact, it's really interesting and obviously extremely sad that in many parts of China, there was a massive divorce spike after couples emerged from lockdown. You can actually see the statistics on that. But some couples are now stuck at home, and they're being forced to interact and engage with each other in different ways. And many couples have had to address issues of or concern about subjects that they were able to avoid because they were busy in their regular routines of work and socializing. And for others, the overall stresses of the pandemic, the financial, emotional, and physical stress, are forcing people to take a hard look at their partners. The tensions are high, and there's nowhere to go. And friends, that's not just happening somewhere out there. That's actually happening. It's here at Evergreen. When we sent out our survey last month, we asked for Evergreeners to rate out of a list of 7 issues, the ones that they are confronting the most in their life right now. And out of 7 possibilities, the number one issue that people said was their marriages. Here at Evergreen, almost 34% of respondents said marriage was an issue, the issue they're dealing with the most in this season. Now, good news is, as you know, we are launching small groups this fall. We're launching them in just a couple weeks, and you're getting information about the various options for you. But we're going to be launching marriage groups. It's actually going to be on an amazing topic about fighting. It's called the good fight. And we're going to learn about and talk and communicate and pray for one another about how we can fight smarter, how we can fight well. Because the reality is we're going to fight in our marriages. We're going to have tensions. We're going to have issues. But we can learn how to fight well. We can fight the good fight. You know, I don't know how many of you are plant people. That might seem kind of weird to say, but I don't know if you've noticed, but all of a sudden in the last couple of years, like, plants are really cool. And like, I see t-shirts and bags that say plant lady, probably like inspiration from Joanna Gaines or something, but there's entire Instagram accounts that are dedicated to houseplants and keeping houseplants. But what's so fascinating about plants that we don't think about very often is they just grow. Like, we don't have to tell them, like, grow, plant, grow. We just have to give it the right environments for health, right? You have to give it sunlight, good soil, and water. You don't have to tell it to do anything. You just give it the things that it needs to be healthy, and it grows. There's a quote by Robert Morris from his book, The Blessed Church, and he said, "You never need to worry about growth in any area of your life. The only factor you need to worry about is health, because healthy things grow." God's intentional plan for the health of the church, of the Big C church, and the growth of his people is community. That's God's plan. Deep communion with others is the biblical model of God. It's not optional. Rick Warren says, "A Christian without a family, without a community, is a spiritual orphan." Listen, wherever you are, whomever you are, God wants you to be part of his family. We want you to be part of a family. We want you to be part of a herd and not be the antelope that's straggling in the back. We want you to find a tribe to belong and to grow. And that's why we have small groups. It's not some sort of ploy. It's not some sort of great model. It's just the best thing we can do for our own health, for our own spiritual growth. In the last week, I know, because I've seen all over social media, that many of you have watched the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. And if you haven't, it's good to know about this film. I recommend it. This film explores the dangerous human impact of social networking, and it includes tech, like a lot of tech experts, exposing the harm and sounding the alarm of the dark side of their own creations. And we kind of gather from that hour and a half documentary that there's a shallow way of knowing that doesn't satisfy the soul. That social media can actually aggravate the soul. That this mindless scrolling is actually alerting our soul. It's letting us know, we're feeling this hunger, saying that our soul is wanting more than what we're getting. Now, we need to be vigilant about the state of each other's soul. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 1 says, "Keep being concerned for one another as the Lord's followers should." Honestly, if we were half as vigilant about the state of our souls as we are about COVID, we would have the enemy shaking in his boots. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't take COVID seriously or take precautions, but what I am saying is that we need to be on high alert for the spiritual as much as we are the physical. See, we have a way greater enemy than any fire or virus or terrorist attack. And he wants to keep us from growing and from being connected. He wants to keep us isolated, lonely, depressed, stressed, anxious, concerned about the future. We need one another now more than ever. The world's going to continue to try to divide, to separate, and isolate us. And our enemy is going to try to emote, to tell us that we're too busy, that we're too overwhelmed, and we're too stressed, we're too emotionally drained for community right now, that now is not a good time. But friends, I want to say this. Community is God's answer to despair. Community is God's answer to fear. Community is God's answer to loneliness. Community is God's answer to fatigue. Community was created for such a time as this. There is no better time than these days to be in community. Evergreen, let us go and live plus one.